We're live. Just welcome everyone to the late night show. We are just going to go live over here on Instagram. There we go. We're live on all channels. So welcome everyone to tonight's late night show with Canada's Restaurant Guy and Dominic. And Dominic, are you having lunch still?
I'm here. No, I'm ready.
Yeah, are you having lunch still? Are you having lunch?
I'm ready. No lunch. No. Done my lunch.
So just to clarify for everyone that's going to be joining us here, we have a great guest on. And I tell you, if this isn't like 3 hours later, I'll be surprised. He does have always a good story. And to everyone that joins us, please also comment or ask us questions on today's show, especially on Instagram. I see you over here on my Instagram channel. So please, we love questions. We're going to have a little fun today with our guest. Also, we're going to use AI to determine the topic that we're going to talk about today. But we'll let our guest pick that. Mm-hmm. Right? I think we're getting that kind of mapped out pretty good, Dominic.
Yeah, I agree. It's fun.
It's fun. It scares the crap out of them, but that's okay.
I think so.
Because it says, like, let's talk about their 80s porn addiction or something like that. Ken's like sweating in the green room.
We'll save that for another night. But
Dominic talk about politics.
That'll be a special invite to that show. So,
Dominic, don't talk about politics, they'll say.
No politics,
we don't talk. So first of all, everyone that we're going to join in, we're going to show our faces here in a second. But I also have to disclose that tonight is definitely not a podcast.
Yeah, this is not a podcast. It's called the Late Night Show, if anybody saw that in the title. Podcast.
It doesn't say podcast. It's not a podcast.
Not even nothing close to a podcast.
No, that would be on Apple or Spotify.
These are better than podcasts.
These are better. I was already on a show today in California.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I got asked to go on a show and end up being one of the speakers. I just wanted to listen. But anyways, let's get rocking tonight. And actually, do you remember that show, Dominic?
What show?
Good Rocking Tonight from like the 80s.
Good Stu Jeffries. No.
Stu Jeffries. You don't remember that? Google it.
Good Rocking Tonight? Was I like Bandstand? What was it?
Well, it wasn't bad. It wasn't that old. It wasn't like the 70s. It was like the mid-80s. Good Rocking Tonight. It was played Bandstand at like 11 o'clock. The 80s, sorry?
Bandstand went into the 80s. Was it on every night?
No, it was Friday nights. It was Good Rocking Tonight with Stu Jeffries. And they played like, no. It was like this CBC knockoff of MTV and much music.
By the mid-80s, we had four channels and not three, so we probably weren't watching Good Rocking Tonight.
You had your mullet?
I had a mullet.
Did you have a mullet?
Of course I had a mullet.
Oh, Lord. That just changes the whole game. Well, we're going to talk tonight. We don't know what we're going to talk about tonight, but it is definitely going to be about the restaurant industry. And we have a guest on here. I think Ken knows everyone in the United States. He is out of New Jersey, I believe, Ken. And we're super stoked to have Ken Stoles on the show tonight. We're going to bring him into the green room. We got to get a commercial so I can break through a commercial as we bring our guest in. But we're going to get Ken in here in a second. And we're going to find out what Ken wants to talk about tonight with AI. So I'm just getting my AI booted up here. It's been kind of cranky, Dominic.
Yeah. Are you using Gemini or?
Chat 4. Actually, I've been using Chat 3, and then I realized today I'm like, oh, shit. No, I haven't been using Chat 4 for a long time. So anyways, let's welcome Ken in. There's Ken. Hi, Ken.
Hey. Hey, Ken. Jay, Dominic, how's everyone doing tonight?
We're great, man. How about yourself?
Good. I'm going to make you guys my Valentines tonight.
Well, that's one more than I have had.
Yeah, that's all right. So just a correction. No offense to anyone from Jersey, but I'm a New York guy.
You're in New Jersey.
No, my factories in Jersey and in Montreal, like headquarters in Montreal. We are, our US facility is in New Jersey. So
what's
headquarters?
What's your headquarters of? What is it?
It's out of Montreal. Art Italius, a manufacturer of fixtures for restaurant, hospitality, retail. So, and nice. Then we have our U.S. facility out of New Jersey. I'm out of Long Island. That's why I'm representing. See, you got that? I'm representing.
Okay.
So, no offense to any Devils or Rangers fans out there, but
I like how you guys really make sure people know that you're not from New Jersey.
No, not from. Listen, they I like them, but let's call it a small man complex. It's, you know, it's all good. It's all good. But they do have some great. You know what? Outside of we'll call it Jersey Shore stuff and the Housewives of Jersey, it's actually a really nice state. You know, it's someone's got to live. Someone's got to live there, right? So,
no, it must be like Edmonton.
I'm representing Strong Island. That's what I'm representing. So,
are you on the boathouse today? It looks like you're on a yacht.
Yeah. Well, I am in a compound. That's for sure.
Okay.
We're right on the water in Granada Bay, which is really beautiful.
Mm.
And so we're on the border of on the south shore of Long Island, between Nassau and Queens.
Holy
so, God. You know, we're literally 30 minutes from the city or less. But to get to Jersey, which is only going through Staten Island for me, ends up being like 3 hours each way.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, I'm exaggerating. But it's, when you get from Brooklyn to Staten Island, the whole vibe changes. And then when you go to Jersey, it's all downhill from there. But okay. So.
Stop being up in Jersey because
one of our guests a couple of weeks ago was actually from Jersey,
right?
No, I love Jersey. That I say the same thing about the New York Mets. They have a nice, cute little club, but you know, it's all in the Bronx. So that's what Jersey's cute little club. They have a nice little clubhouse there.
Ken, you look like you lost a lot of weight.
Oh, thank you. I'm getting a lot of exercise from my girlfriend. So,
look at that face.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, walking along the beach, right? That's what.
Yeah,
I heard.
We locked eyes for a second.
I don't know where you were going, Dominic. I don't know. Yeah. We're talking about the restaurant industry today.
No. Yeah. So with this AI, what do we do with AI?
You want to get into the topic for tonight around the restaurant?
We can jump into whatever you want.
No, we don't want to wreck your Valentine's night.
Nah, it's all good. We're having some food, having some wine. What do you have?
How much weight you lost?
You think I lost a lot of weight?
Yeah, you look like you lost a lot of weight.
I lost it. You know, the second person in 3 days that said that. You know, that hadn't seen me in a while.
Yeah.
I'm staying active. That's the nicest. That's the most polite way I can say it.
Good for you.
You're looking good. You're looking good, man.
We got the screen up there.
Listen, I have a long way to go before I become a movie star like you guys, but I fight the fight every day.
No, you get to come back tomorrow, man.
Yeah. I say, you know what? Smoke and mirrors does magic. It really does.
I found the button. You at least you have a good reason.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's funny. It's funny. So,
All right. Well, let's get into this. So, Cam, we've got your name in here. What topic? We're going to ask ChatGPT. Long night. We're going to ask ChatGPT for what topic should we talk about tonight? Now, we all know AI is smarter than us. Big surprise. It doesn't take much. It's crazy. But we're going to see what it does. And then, Ken, you get to pick. So,
we're going to ask,
please list three topics. Okay, here we go. So we're going to get this. It may say, like, let's talk about the 80s with you. I don't know if that's going to be scary, but we can talk about it. So here's the questions it's asking us to ask you. What topic is it for us tonight?
Shit, that's a big question, Jay.
So
heavy. Should we ask it to, like, dumb it down a bit, Dominic?
Well, she's got, you know, with 14 points, please discuss.
Okay.
In less than 2,000 words.
We're assuming it's a she, right?
No. Absolutely not.
So, three topics: post-pandemic adaptation, sustainability practices, and tech innovations. Ken.
Wow.
You know what?
Like, you're pretty smart in all this, by
and
the
let's,
way.
And let's tie it back to their industry and what they do, Jay. That's I want to throw a twist in
here. You want to do that? You want to throw a curve on this?
Well, no, just like let him pick the topic, but let's talk how it
like,
relates.
Okay, well, I know Ken's going to bring it up. Don't worry.
I would say
commercial here soon. Don't worry.
You know, there's a couple of ways we can go about it. I would say consumer behaviors in general. You know, that's a.
I like to talk sustainability with you though.
Sustainability is important. Sure, we could go there.
Let's go there. Okay. So tonight's topic is about sustainable practices, right? Again, like, tell me about this. Like, what do you think around sustainable practices when it comes to the food service industry?
I think it goes in many layers, right? So we talk about on what we see as consumers going into a restaurant or, you know, or a hotel, hospitality, whatever, and they have certain practices in place that are visible for the consumer, you know, recyclable, and, you know, they may be a, you know, some kind of message or memo that they give back, or they are do-gooders in some way, shape, or form to make the consumer feel good. Then there's another layer beyond it. What are they doing, you know, in the back of house? What are they doing with food waste? All right. Well, how are they addressing food waste? Is it getting repurposed? Or, you know, there's all sorts of different things we can dive into there. And then, you know, well, then who are their vendor, you know, partners? What are their, you know, how is the meat sourced? How is the, you know, food sourced? You know, all the food, the veggies, the fruits. How is it sourced? How is it cared for? What about the, you know, we talk about fixturing, right? All the, you know, what are the manufacturers doing for the kitchens? How are they giving, you know, so there's a lot of recycling that goes into that.
Now, do you guys recycle a lot down there in New York?
We dump it right into the water along with a couple of bodies, but I think what's happening is,
I got a question about that.
You don't know question. Well, you don't want to ask questions.
We're from landlocked Alberta. Come on, Ken. This will be crazy.
Anyone asks.
Outside of bodies, when you've torn something apart to recycle it, like you're tearing down a restaurant. Like, I'm assuming that's part of what you do, right? You're tearing out the existing fixtures and you're putting new stuff in.
We manufacture the fixtures themselves, right?
So, okay, but does your crew in some cases actually go and put them in, or is that up to the local construction crew that's going to put them in?
It's usually has a contractor, and we would send our people to oversee or participate, but it's really the manufacturing. So, you know, think about materials in general. So, different metals, what's in the metals.
Yeah.
Are you recycling from metal waste? Is metal waste being recycled and reused and repurposed? What about the paints and the finishes that are used, you know, on tables and chairs and things like that? How are they manufactured? What practices are being put in place?
Right.
And you know what?
Does all that come up a lot?
It does. You know, it does in quite more than you'd think, because we'll get audited. By
audited?
We get audited for sure. Some of the biggest names in food and beverage will come and audit us to make sure that we are producing in certain ways, in certain manners, how we're being socially, environmentally responsible. You know, what are those things? And, you know, you get rated as a supplier for some of these big companies.
Seriously. And,
you know, so I'm not, you know, I don't want to drop company names. They're very large, like a lot that we work
for sure.
So it's, you know, and I don't know if I have you know, NDAs in place where I can't say who they are or they are.
Better not say anything. But
you'll end up in the recycle.
I'll be in the recycle, you know, pile. I get dumped into the Hudson River.
Well, it's good that they want you to be able to prove what you say you're doing, and you're able to prove it. There's ESG audits, just like there's child labor audits and, you know, food safety audits and animal welfare audits. I think that whole ecosystem on the, it's easy for people to say it, right? And it's harder to do it. It is. I guess how long's the business been in? How long have they been around?
Okay. So they actually just celebrated last month, 40 years.
Wow. So, cool.
It was.
And where did it start? Did it start in Montreal or start
started in Italy.
No way. Serious?
Yeah. Art Italia. So it's art Italia, finding the art in everything. You know, it's design driven, even though we're manufacturers. Few brothers, moved over to Montreal, set up shop, little wire shop, got involved in the industry. And then slowly but surely just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, what may have started as a 15,000 square foot little shop is now over 1 million square feet in Montreal. And then we have another 150 in Jersey, which is where I'm out of. And then another 150 out of California. And then we have a whole team in China. So when we talk about being audited, even, you know, we have people that visit not only our factory in Jersey and Montreal and California, but also China as well, for the very reasons, Dominic, you mentioned, making sure that, you know, there's certain child and slave labor and all this other stuff that, you know, we have to be responsible for. Someone's got to be responsible for.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and again, part of the manufacturing process is the materials that you're using and the processes, how you go about it. But again, beyond the manufacturing of fixtures, we're talking about as a whole, the environment, right? And in the industry as a whole, right? What was the question that AI spit out for us? Okay.
The significance of ethical sourcing.
So ethical sourcing, food. Right. So that's, I see food as a big part of it. You know, people are now, you know, turning to different lifestyles. People are vegan or, you know, no hormones or, you know, all this other stuff. And think about it. Look at the people, you know, in North America, I would say a lot of the United States, versus other countries. And, you know, there's just so many fertilizers and all sorts of stuff that's going in the crops and how they're feeding the animals. And I think it was maybe 15 years ago, it was a Michael Moore that did the Supersize Me, you know, TV movie.
Something Spurlock was a different guy, but yeah.
I thought it was Michael Moore. Either way, it was Supersize Me, and it was all about, you know, how we're getting obese, and a lot of it has to do with what we put in our bodies, right? And what's going in our bodies. And I think the new generation, the younger generation now, are more mindful of what they're eating.
So I have a comment on that. So, and I've heard that before, Ken, many times. Do you think also as we get smarter in requesting that, these companies are also getting smarter on how to hide it?
That's a good question. I think also the companies are having people from that generation seeping in at the, you know, starting to come in. And so that generation is going to take control and they're definitely, I'm sure there's things that are hidden. We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. I don't think we know.
We don't know what we don't know. We know very little, and we don't know a lot. Right. So it's easy to get bamboozled. But we all like to hear, you know, the warm and fuzzy story about, yes, we're doing this and we're doing that. And even if they are claiming to do 5%, 1% of what they claim, it's still better than zero.
Yeah, right? 100%. So, I think the hard part is we want this massive change. No extra fertilizers, you know, all the things that allow North America to have pretty cheap food, right? Canada and the U.S. for sure. So as we go back the other way, it's more expensive. Until it reaches sort of mass production in an environmentally sustainable way, when there's just still small producers doing it, it's more expensive.
Oh, absolutely.
There's got to be a point where that sort of takes over and things get better, you know, prices will stabilize because everybody's doing it that way. And it's, you know, they'll find better ways to do it naturally. But until then, I think we're in for a slow change only because of prices, especially with all the inflation that's happening.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about prices.
Yeah. In your understanding, you've seen costs on all sorts of materials skyrocket in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's funny, Dominic, that you talk about that. We're turning to a lot of automation now, and one of the questions that we, you know, talked AI to spit out. One of the questions, if I'm not mistaken, was technology. So as we improve with technology, so will the output of whatever we're, you know, producing. So if we're looking to be more efficient, more sustainable, technology is going to lead the way. And, you know, as Jay said earlier, AI is smarter than us. AI may not have the swag that the three of us have, but I think it's a lot smarter, you know, and self-learning. So
that's scary too at the same time, right?
Well, it's very Terminator-esque. All right.
Yes.
But
did you see the machine that's in the asparagus field that's got, you know, 700 lasers under it that's shooting at the weeds? Have you seen that thing?
No.
Have you seen it, Jay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's scary. It's cool because it's just going over the field and it's lasering the weeds, you know, before they ever get big and can crowd out the crop. But, you know, If that thing got loose, what could it do?
Well, listen, I would love to have that technology for one day. There's a lot of people I like to weed out. So I just need a day.
Just one day.
I just need a day. You get it all back. Right. Exactly. But yeah, you know, it is amazing how technology will, you know, take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Of whatever it is that we output, and then at some point it's going to take over. It's going to be, I mean, because it's smarter than us, self-learning. But until we get to that point, we still have to do what we think is best and right and good and ethical, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do.
Well, that allows you to be in business for 40 years, right? Anyway, right? That's part of why you're still around.
Well, it's ethics is a big part of it for 100%. Sure. Yeah. And, you know, the people that are me first are usually the first to go and the last to remain. You know, I don't know, like cockroaches. They get out of one place and they get into another. But, we've all know those people. But in the meantime, I think the far majority of people today are looking to do what's right and what's good, appropriate, ethical, and we talk about, you know, the restaurant industry. I think a lot of that is sustainability, environmentally friendly, what's good for us to put in our body. The organic section in the supermarket, it keeps getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, Dominic, you talked about pricing. Obviously, organic, you're going to be paying more. You just are.
So we have a question that came. We have a comment that came in, and I agree with this comment. That technology. Okay, I'm going to ask the question to you, Ken. Sorry, to interrupt.
Okay.
We got to answer our fans. Technology will never replace chefs. True or false?
I'd say true, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I can make an argument both ways. I'll say true, they can't replace chefs because they don't have a heart and they don't have a soul. Ooh, and a chef, right? A chef creates with love and passion. AI will never have that. Now, for the mass population, they don't really give a shit. they want what's tasty and salty or sweet or whatever it is, and it doesn't
fast.
Right.
Cheap
and cheap. So mass produced, cheap. But again, I think, you know, we're talking about organic being, you know, more expensive. At some point, technology will catch up and organic may end up becoming the standard. It just may be, you know, we may not be here for that, but I think that that could be a trend that happens.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a while, but there'll be a rebuttal too for this, right? Like, oh, you're going to go to a restaurant that's an AI or a bot or a non-bot. I can see that.
Well, yeah, you know, I agree. It starts as a fad, I think. You know, some, like, I remember when the ice cream had the, was it the nitrous, not the nitrous oxide, the, you know, where all the smoke
nitrogen
ice cream, right? That was a fad. It was cool. It was a visual experience, right? Then you have, you know, Brooklyn Dumpling, which, you know, has the lockers, right? The hot lockers.
No, we just got one in Calgary.
Oh, you really? No kidding.
Yes. Yes. He opened one in Calgary.
No kidding. Yeah. So again, that's a cool thing. It's like almost like the Automax, you know, where you put the nickel in and you got the pie. You know, remember the old Bugs Bunny where he
we had some of those in Toronto. I saw a documentary on that though and how they disappeared, which was kind of cool, but kind of sad but cool. But yeah.
What are you talking about?
It's kind of this locker system where you can explain it, Ken, because you had them in New York, a lot of them, I'm sure.
Oh, back in the day, you know, you go in and you put a, well, I say a nickel in, you know, now it would be a couple of bucks, whatever it is, and there'll be a pie there, or there'll be a sandwich, all pre-made stuff, right? Exactly.
Was it in the hospital?
No, it was on the corner outside the pool hall, right?
Serious?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. They had them in Chicago, too.
Pretty sure there's a documentary, Jay. I'll send you the link on Netflix or one of those places on how the death of the Automat, I think, is what it was.
Yeah. But now it's sort of coming back in different ways. Like, so I'm using the, you know, Brooklyn Dumpling as an example that they have the hot lockers. And again, we're seeing more lockers used in different ways. I think for third-party delivery, it's fantastic. So it keeps some level of sanity and normalcy. There's not crowds and pushing and shoving, that it's all automated and you could separate. Brooklyn Dumpling created their whole business model around this experience, about the locker experience.
The lockers have been around in a buddy of mine went to Japan maybe 10 years ago, and they were in Japan and maybe Hong Kong or something like that. A lot of places doing the same thing. You know, yeah, kind of what's old is new again, right?
That is in everything, in art.
Okay, but I have a question for you, Ken, on that.
Yeah.
Okay, because take away those lockers, take away the beautiful, like, I love what he's done. I'm a huge fan. I actually messaged him the other day. And take all that away, okay? Would it still sustain itself just based on the food?
No. I didn't even have to think about it. No, there's no pause. Their competitive advantage is an experience. It's whatever you want to call it. I call it an experience. It's different. It's just a different way to shop than others. And if more pop up like that, then their competitive advantage, you know, sort of dwindles down. But it is an experience. It's something that's new. Are you going to do it every day? You're not going to go there every day. You're going to go there once a week? Maybe. Maybe. You know, it depends on if you have one down the block. You're not going to go out of your way. But maybe you go out of your way once a month. I don't know. You know, it's cool. It was like the nitrogen, you know, ice cream bar. It's an experience. It's cool. Will you do it again? Yeah, maybe. You know.
Yeah. Like that's, like, I think the food's got to be a big part of it.
I that's where you get the return consumer, right? You can draw someone in the first time, but you have to have product that is really good to have that repeat consumer and have them share their experience and the food. Like a couple of months ago, we went to a restaurant called Moody Tongue in Manhattan. Amazing. Just a better food experience. They had a truffle beer, which was a sipping beer. It was like $45 for 5 ounces because you're not there to drink beer. You're there to pair it with the food and sip it and enjoy the truffle flavor. And to me, that was part of an experience. So what do? We share that experience and other friends have gone since. And that's how... You know, we'll be back.
Yeah, I think it's even harder in today's age to sustain something like that, unless the food's really good, because there's so many good choices now. Like there's always been a lot of restaurants, right? Maybe, and there's more restaurants now more than ever.
Yep.
Really, there's our choices are vast. So unless the food's really good, like 50 years ago, that concept could have worked because there was only 4 or 5 places like that. And there wasn't a lot of other choices. I'm sure there would have been no sipping beer in 1980.
Definitely not.
Right. So, but now there's probably, where are you in New York City? There might be 10 places that are offering sipping beers. I'm sure.
I'm sure you're right.
So I think you're bang on in saying that the food still has to be really good, because if the food's shitty, nobody's going back.
100%. The food. And so when Jay asked the question, if this particular company didn't have their technology or their experience, would they still be around based on the food? And I'd say no, because there's so many other great food options that are out there. Again, I'm a little spoiled. I'm in New York. So, you know, I can go up and down any street in Manhattan and have a brand new experience for my entire life. I can go to a different place and have a different experience, but the food has to be good. Otherwise it's one and done.
So
right?
Ken, what are you seeing? I'm going to take advantage while you're in New York. What are you seeing in New York right now? It's hot in the industry right now. Come on, you're out, you know, you've got your finger on the pulse better than anyone.
You know, it's funny because it depends on who you're asking, what age you're asking. If you're asking my daughters, it would be, where's the coolest Instagrammable place?
Right. Still, eh? Still?
Yeah. Yeah. Who's got the backdrop? Who's got the wow? If you're asking me.
No food. It's not about the food, anything. It's just Instagram.
It's probably both.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, if some of the you know, the social media personalities that go around in the food space, specifically in New York, all their spots are spot. All the places they go are spot on, and their recommendations are really, really good. But so I think if you're asking me, I would say the quality of the food, the environment is really important for me.
So are you seeing really good in like restaurants with really crazy cool environments? What do you
definitely
say?
Definitely. Yeah, there's a restaurant that opened up about a year ago called Bad Roman, down in the Columbus Circle area. And it's just cool. It's just, and the food's great. The food, you know what? It's take away the environment. The food is still great.
Mm.
And so when you pair the two, you know, it's like a perfect, you know, and then if you have someone that's with you, right, you got good company, even better. It's all part of the experience.
Why I ask that question is that back in the day, when I ran a club, we used to say you have to be more than the beer, because you can get like a Budweiser is a Budweiser anywhere, right? It all tastes the same. So you had to be more than the Budweiser, because the party will move if you're just focused on the environment.
It's a little better in Canada. I got to be honest with you.
Well, we know that.
I know. So,
but just the party will move, right? Based on the environment. But the food, like we have a chef here on Instagram watching us, is that the food is really going to bring them back and back if you're innovative in the food space.
Yeah.
You can't just rely on your environment. We've seen it come and go, right? Unless you're going to flip that environment every 5 years.
That's hard to do, right?
Change. You know what? I'll give you a really great example. So Nobu, you know, one of the Nobus in Manhattan, is always known globally as a really posh, cool environment, great sushi, great Asian fare. One of their head chefs left and opened up a little shop in Long Island, adjacent to a fish market, right? And and he's the only chef. It's very understated. The food is fantastic and it's prepared wonderfully, and they're packed. But it's, you can't be packed because it's a small space, but there's always demand because the food is great. Didn't matter. You know, the environment was less. It had nothing to do with it. It was about the food and it was about the chef and how he prepared and how he, all right. So whoever asked earlier about AI and, you know, replacing chefs, no, they won't. They can't. Yeah.
What do you think, Dominic? You're very quiet tonight.
He's saying everything I say. We're probably the same age.
Well, I was just going to say, we'd be having beers together. I could tell.
No, yeah, 100% agree. I think, you know, Richard, when he opened his first pizza shop, you've met Richard, a friend of ours. When he opened his first pizza shop here in Calgary, it was, you know where the Blackfoot Inn is, right?
Yeah.
Around the corner from there, deep inside there, is called Manhattan Road, or Burbank Road, it's called Burbank Road.
Behind
the Blackfoot, around the corner, in a crappy strip. And he was doing thousands of pizzas out of there because the food, exactly for what you just said, because the food, he moved to Blackfoot and 42nd there, whatever it is, after, you know, when that spot came up, because he needed a bigger spot and he wanted to grow. But yeah, he opened in a really shitty spot. But the food was good. The rent was cheap, right? It got him into business because the rent was cheap. You know, there was already a kitchen and a hood there, so it saved him $20,000 or something. So he opened there, right? Because he thought most of his business was going to be delivery or takeout. But, you know, he had sit-down business right from the get-go. And, yeah, it was good. So, yeah, both things have to happen. But you can't sustain on environment, and you can't sustain on good looks, and you can't sustain on, you know, promising the world and saying, I'm going to source all these great things if the food's shitty. So
right,
if
you know, you used pizza as an example. So Jay knows this, that I was working with John Daly's team and his, you know, and he's got his hand in a bunch of different businesses. One of them is the pizza business, which is really interesting. And I was at one of his events, and he had the John Daly pizza truck there.
Sure.
And I is it good? He goes, yeah, it's really good. Now I'm a pizza snob. Self-admitted, and it was like one of those conveyor belt 2 minute pizzas.
Serious?
But it had to do with the product. Like, the people on his team specified the right product, so, and the right equipment. And I said, you know what? For this category of pizza, far better than any of the others that I had tasted along the way. Now, listen, we're not talking about individual shops like the Defara's or LB's, right? It's meant for mass production, right? And it was really, really good. Why? Because the product itself supports itself. It tastes good, and people come back, right?
And I think the cool thing about that is there's not a big we talked about this before, Jay. There's not a big price difference. Sometimes there is, but very often, good to great is not a big massive jump.
No,
right? Like the crappy product can be cheap, but good product, you can get really good product for just a little bit more money. And then if it's prepared properly, like you say, if they put good ingredients, yeah, it's coming out of this mass sort of production sort of environment. But if it's good, it's good.
You know, and at the end of the day, it's a business. So, you know, if you're going to get greater volume, you can go lower on your margin. And then you'll also have better buying power. And you could, you know, so... It is a whole domino effect, and I think it starts, to your point, Dominic, with the quality of the food.
Yeah.
Right? Pay a little bit more, you charge a little bit more, yeah. Right?
If you get good quality, they'll come back.
Or you charge the same and take a lower margin and pick it up in volume. It depends. Every business is different, but... I think at the end of the day, it's about quality, whether it's food, whether it's, you know.
Okay.
We have that in training. High quality, low price. We get volume. We do. That's exactly our model. We have high quality, good service. We got to hit all these other things, but we want to sell a lot, so our price is low, and we sell a lot.
I was going to challenge that because we did the Dollar Dine store model last month, didn't we, Dominic? Ken probably didn't hear about this.
No, think about it. Costco's got a pretty damn good hot dog for $1.50, okay? And they sell millions of them.
Yes,
they do. They still make a little bit of money. They're not making mass amounts of money, right? But they're making money still out of that on that hot dog. They've had to bring production in house, blah blah blah. You know, all those things. Yeah, dollar is hard. $5 is probably easy. You can get, you know, three or four nice, really good chicken fingers or chicken strips for $5. I'm sure you could do it.
But let me ask you this. The family that shops once a week to Costco or once every 2 weeks to Costco, and they're taking their kids out, you know, because who's going to watch them or whatever. You go out as a family, you shop as a family, and you're going to make sure you get your $1.50 dogs, you know, or your chicken fingers or whatever it is.
$7 pizza or whatever it is.
So it's almost like it's a lost leader for Costco. They're not losing money on it, but maybe they're gaining more customers or more.
And brand loyalty.
Brand loyalty.
Talk about that bloody hot dog. I'm sure if you went and did on... I used to work there like 20 years ago, and they did a whole thing of where Costco was mentioned. And, you know, they had a 4 or 5 minute little video clip on, you know, in Seinfeld and all these places where Costco was mentioned. But if you did that today, there'd be 10,000 mentions a day, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right. In media. So the chicken, me and you talked about the chicken too, Jay. And they're getting into the, you know, farming their own chickens because they want to be sustainable and they want to have good,
They don't want to keep their animals caged.
Right. They want to have good animal welfare.
Yes, humanity. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, they want to treat the farmers right. And they're trying to do all these things because it's harder and harder to do, right? And to keep the costs in line. That's the hard part.
But keep in mind, Costco has the buying power and leverage to execute. So, and it didn't happen overnight, you know, but they do have the ability to make a, you know, to make a difference like that. You know, they do. Walmart does. By the way, Costco food is great. The food there, you know, when you go shopping, the meats are fantastic. You know, their sandwich platters for parties and their cakes, their bakery. It's all really, really good stuff. Yeah.
They started with that in mind, though. If you think, yeah, they have the buying power now. But at the beginning, they said, no, we have to have quality first. We can't have low prices. Like we got to offer value. Yes, we got to do all these things, but we have to have quality because nobody will ever come back. Absolutely. So that's restaurants have to have that mentality too. I'm with you. If think about maybe lower margins somewhere or doing less of some things so that you can offer higher quality and better value. Because if you have better value, people will come back.
I also think you can't be all things to all people.
Exactly.
Know what you do really well and just kick ass. And you want to start expanding on it or adding to it, just stay true to your what is in your, you know, your tool belt. What is your best tools? Right.
So I got to throw something at you too, Ken, here, because you made me really think. Both of you did. I did recreate the dinner, like the dining model we did last month, saying that we could do a dollar store mentality for a restaurant. So we figured that out. But you got me thinking that maybe today, because we have shifted, the industry really hasn't shifted as a business model. But maybe we haven't shifted in a sense to understand the model of the profitability of the business. What I mean is maybe the restaurants today have to, like, you need two restaurants to have a profitable life in this model. I don't know if that's me or you.
That's you.
No, it's not me. It's Ken.
Me?
What are yes. I don't know, it's your sound. Whatever. Let me finish. So here's the model. As I'm saying is, I think maybe restaurants today, you have to have two or three locations to have a decent life, opposed to the old days of just having one restaurant, Dominic. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like my dad was a truck driver. He made a great living being a one truck driver. And today you need to have multiple trucks on the road to have the same income as you did back in those days. So it's being rewritten. Is the industry, do you think, you have to go that way as well?
Who are you asking?
Yeah. I think it's really hard. I think it's very easy to say, but super hard to do. And
it is. That's what I'm saying. Like, are we setting people up to not just their fail, but always try to get more out of the same model where it's like, sorry, it's like Subway. You're gonna need multiple Subways.
Yeah, you know, it's good. You know, that's a good point. You know, just coincidentally, I'll be at their show in Vegas at the end of the month. They have their big franchise show, and so we're showing there. And to your point, Jay, you need multiple Subways to be profitable, to make some money, to earn a living. Yeah.
How many do you think you need, Ken?
Four or five or something.
It's got to be high.
I would say five to really have.
Cool.
Yeah, but you know what? Their buy-in, it's, you know, the buy-in for a Subway is much different than the buy-in for a McDonald's.
Yeah, it's a lot lower. It's like 20 grand or something, right?
It's not. And your second location and third location are also, incentivized. Right. So they want, you know, they don't make a lot of money off of the one time franchise fee. They're making the money on, you know, the royalties. And so it's a volume game. So they'd rather forego that one time franchisee or go lower on their second and third location. They want their franchisees to have success and grow. And you know, 5 to 10 to 50 to 100,000, you know, that just keeps going. And there are some franchisees that own in the hundreds and the thousands, not many, but there are some. Wow. You know, it grows exponentially once you get to a certain point, and then it's all about also your, you know, support. You know, who are you surrounding your, you know, how do you grow as a company? It's not just the average Joe who wanted to open up a sandwich shop and opened up one and then opened up a second and opened up a third, and they're comfortable. You know, you have someone who says, you know what, I want to build an infrastructure.
But that's exactly it. And I think that's what we look at restaurateurs today, is that it's maybe the one restaurant model today, like you're literally setting you up to fail. Right? Like not to fail, but it's going to be a struggle, let's say, or it's going to be hard to make that money like you used to.
Yeah, it's hard. But, you know, what are the two biggest costs in the restaurant space?
Rent and labor.
I would say food and labor, right?
Yeah. Food and labor, yeah.
Yeah, rent for sure, right?
Yeah, food and labor. Those top three, but food and labor, yes. Rent labor. Would be third. Yeah.
Food and labor. And the so labor, you know, has been a challenge over the last number of years, you know, I think since COVID, or, you know, just as COVID started going away, and for whatever reason, people were just harder to find good. It's harder to find good help and more expensive. So what is the owner supposed to do? They go to automation or semi-automate or whatever it is, just anything they could do. If they can see, you go to a supermarket, you could do your, you know, self-checkouts, right? Yeah. When you're doing self-checkout, you're taking away someone's job. Right,
well, in supermarkets, they, as much as they maybe they can't automate, they can automate that. On the food production side, up here, I'm sure it's the same in the States. Some of the big supermarkets, they have central commissaries that they'll make all the salads for all their delis in one place. They'll make all their sandwiches for all their delis in one place. They've got their own, you know, you don't see a lot of meat cutting in stores anymore, but, you know, some of them have central meat cutting.
Yes.
City, right? They'll have a big commissary.
Yes.
Same for produce, Jay, that is trimming all the produce in one spot.
Yeah.
A big company here is opening one in every major city to not only support the hot food sections in their stores, but to support their delivery operations, because they want to, they can't have that at the store anymore, right? It used to be an add-on, but as that grows, that's its own thing now.
Listen, commissary allows expansion. It's built for expansion.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. But the other thing on this, I'm just thinking.
And more in commissary, when you're all of a sudden servicing 40 or 50 locations, you can automate much quicker, yeah, faster, and make it make more sense versus the individual restaurant, right, or the individual location.
Yeah.
I think there's something there to think about as we look at the models of restaurants and how to be profitable and how to make more money. And you're going to get into better buying, you know, power. You're going to get into all these different things, labor, all these different things as you multiply your locations. But I think the one restaurant survival is probably going to get harder and harder for people to make a living off of just one restaurant as we move forward. Unfortunately,
Because there's more choice, or is it because the margins are thinner?
The margins are thinner. Like you're running 4% if you're lucky in Canada right now, Ken, on your profit. You're bringing 4 cents on each dollar if you're lucky, right? And that's if you know what you're doing. And trust me, so many people are struggling. I highly doubt they're making 4 cents. So what I'm saying is, I think why it makes me think more is that when third-party delivery came into the marketplace, let's say, right, DoorDash, Uber, all these guys came in, I think a lot of restaurants felt like that was another new income stream coming into their business that was sustainable. And then COVID hit, and it was like the last thing to save us. So I think there is something there to look at, like the mindset of how people were thinking, going, is this another stream? I can make money at this. I can multiply my or double my business. I don't know if that's necessarily what sustained and stayed. I think we have to look at it again and bring in, like, what's your next? And we've talked about this before, me and Dominic, many times, of looking at like side hustles and different ways to generate income in your P&L, because P&Ls today are, like you said, Ken, it's the labor, it's the food cost, it's your occupational cost, all these different things are the same thing. The last 150 years, same thing. So I think we need to look at it differently. And I think it might be, Dominic, you need multi locations, and that could be from brands under the same title. It does have to be the same restaurant.
I also think it depends on the restaurant type and food experience we're talking about.
Volume. It's going to be your volume.
No, but I mean, a fine dining restaurant can survive on its own because it has.
Can it? Because they tanked. Can it?
No. They did. They did during COVID. Of course, they tanked. But
they were already down before COVID. They were going south.
I'd like to see where their numbers are now.
Probably not good. Probably not good because it's just you can't. I probably think fast casual has grown dramatically. I would think that a lot of the fine diners
want to get out again, right? But the food cost is what's hindering that segment is just because your $40 steak is now a $70 steak.
You shrink your market. Your market space is shrinking so much because there's not so many people that can afford a $70 meal.
Yeah, right? But also, we're talking about, I think in the QSR space, footprints are going smaller. Drive-through has been booming.
Huge.
So people aren't necessarily looking for the sit-down experience. They're looking to eat and go, right?
So, uniqueness and speed, I think it's fallen into. Uniqueness and speed in the drive-through space.
On the delivery side of that, Jay, I don't know if you saw today, there was like a worldwide, Canada, the U.S., and in Europe, I think, there was a strike by, the delivery drivers asking for more money. I don't want to get into that part of it, but the ironic part of that is Uber yesterday said they were going to buy back, $4 billion worth of stock. So they kind of said, there's the drivers can make really good money, blah, blah, blah. They're going to buy back $4 billion worth of stock, and their stock went up 14%. So on that delivery side, it's helped restaurants for sure, right? Because it's through COVID for sure, right? There's all of a sudden, there's this greater appeal to anywhere in the city, you can be delivering your stuff. But they're giving up, 20 and 30% to the delivery service. So as inflation hits, is that sustainable? For the restaurants to be able to feed that,
as the prices go up. So I was in the dark kitchen space for a period of time, towards the tail end of COVID. And so I understood this, I got to see close up different models of different, dark kitchens. And, we're talking about what are the greatest costs, right? And it's labor and food. And now, Jay, you're talking about, maybe the individual restaurateur is making 4%, which, really blows my mind. But now add the 20% that Dominic's talking about to the third party delivery. When we were growing up, we're all around the same age, right? We're around. I mean, I think I'm the oldest dog here, but that's okay. I think I am. Maybe I'm not. It's just the New York smog that's just melted.
Well, you got that glow. I don't know if it's the light. I hope it's not the smog.
It's Valentine's Day. Yeah. So that's. Yeah. See what's happening behind. See that? Yeah. See that? You watching that?
Yeah, I saw it.
All right, there you go.
Yeah. You gotta go, right?
Hey. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. No. Yeah. What were we talking about?
Oh my God. The dark kitchen, the 4%.
No, I understand. So when you're adding 20% for the third party delivery, you're left with nothing. When we were growing up, we would do local delivery. The individual location delivers.
Yeah.
why do I have to go through Uber Eats as a consumer or Skip the Dish or any of them? Why do I have to do that when I could just call the restaurant itself and they will just have they'll have their driver, right?
You would, and you could have, right? The pizza guys and the Chinese food guys, they had that figured out a long time ago.
Yes.
And it's still, you know, famously, a lot of them still, you know, those guys don't use Uber and Skip and any of those guys because who wants to give up 30%? Right? They're used to making their good margins on that local delivery. The problem is that our youth, our kids, they want to see 40 or 50 or 250 choices like they do on Netflix for restaurants. And they would prefer to go to the app than to call the local restaurant that they like. And that all of a sudden Uber or, you know, or Just Eat or whatever they're called down there.
Yeah.
They own the customer. So they own the customer because they're using their app. Right.
They're using the app.
I applaud the restaurants that say we're not doing business with you. And we're going to do our own delivery and we're going to incentivize the customer to come and pick it up and do everything to fight that. But it must be just heartbreaking to do it. It's like,
well, you know, and like you said, the drivers are now, you know, taking a stand because they're not, you know, really make, you know, they're not able to make a living. It's, you
no,
know,
they can't make a living. Yeah.
You know, fuel is still high. You know, just everything. Everything's gone up. Everything is high. It's, you know, we're dealing with inflation and.
I want to share though before we teeter off on this topic about third-party delivery. Here's how I would do it. Totally different. I would use your going back to like P&L, like how we would look at putting this on the P&L as your delivery, because a lot of people baked it into their food costs and their overall business plan. Like it was baked in and it was disrupting the bottom P&L because we were looking at it as a profit generator from the food that we were delivering. We were looking at it totally different. And I was thinking, because I really thought when we heard Uber coming out and we have Skip the Dishes in Canada here, I looked at it differently. I looked at it as we need to put it into the P&L, right, maybe even with it, in our marketing. And I looked at that third-party aggregator in what we're doing there as actually a marketing model for our business. Because when you were on, Dominic, you're like, you're out the lunch, Jay, is that when you look at it, it's, well, no, I'm serious.
Oh, I didn't say it, man.
Just wait, I'm getting there. Is that, because right now, the profits are so crap on it, so you're not linking money at it, really, no different than marketing. You don't really look at the ROI on your marketing and say, okay, this billboard is making me this much money. You have to look at Skip the Dishes and that third-party delivery the same way, I believe, within your marketing. Why is that? If you leverage and use it properly, it becomes an extremely strong marketing engine for you. You're on an app. You're listed with other people. If you do it properly, you'll be at the top of that list. Now, not one person in that space leveraged people to come into the restaurant through using that source, meaning foot traffic. No one really did that. No one had wrote on the bag, thanks so much for ordering. Next time you're in the restaurant, please drop by. We want you in the restaurant. No one enticed people to come in. I would have done that. So I look at using third party as a part of your marketing model because it is super powerful. When do you get a chance to be, other than a podcast, is to be listed with other restaurateurs. It's like the old phone book. Right? Like, why do I have to be in the phone book? Well, you have to be with everyone else because it becomes a place when I open the page, they used to sell the bigger ad space for you in the phone book. I look at our delivery as a marketing spend because your profits are, you're probably, if you're lucky, making anything off your delivery. So you might as well make it as your marketing channel and then just soak the crap, like suck the crap out of it within your marketing and build it differently. But what happened is too many people, I think, in the restaurant industry are so desperate to make profits because they're hurting so hard, is that they saw, they go, whoa, I can make money at this. And then who's making money? It's the third-party companies. And I totally look at it differently, and I know I'm probably thinking some bad shit.
No, I think I there's merit in doing in attributing some of it, especially if they're doing what you say. And you know, those third party guys, they allow you to be sponsored and be at the top over the people that get it organically, which is
But even like 90% of them have crappy pitchers. They don't have their menu simplified. It's confusing. When I travel, I use it just nonstop. It is frustrating. And it's, you know, like there's a lot of things that they're against it. So they're not really even playing a game within that space. And Ken, you might have seen that too, is like, if you're going to get into this space, you need to know what you're doing. Packaging needs to be right. Food needs to be right. All these things need to be right. And a lot of people, I don't think, played the game right. But I look as marketing.
You know, you brought it up earlier. It's a missed opportunity when you have that third party deliver to the consumer at their doorstep, and they're opening up their bag and they're opening up their food. There should be something there to incentivize the customer to come in, physically come in,
yep,
to that store, whatever that store is.
You know, like even you know, like when you look at third-party apps today, they have at the top, like, do you want cutlery? You know, it's free. Do you want napkins? It's free. Like, yes. Why don't you have it on there? Would you like to join our subscription program? It's $1, or it's 10 cents, or it's free. Or would you like to join our loyalty program? It's a part of the menu.
Well, the third-party app is probably not going to allow that in their app. Guaranteed.
Want to make a bet? Let's
bet on it. I'll tell you why, Jay, because they don't want people leaving the app. So they're not going to allow you to. You might be able to have the message in, but I'm sure if it was an advertisement inside of the product, you know, on the app.
I'll check with my directors.
What's the bet? That's what I want to know.
What's the bet? Yeah, free lunch.
you're moving one set of numbers from a column to another column, right? The costs are going to be the costs, the profits are going to be the profits, but you can utilize that consumer engagement moment better and more efficiently, wisely. You know, that hasn't happened yet. You know, there's still, well, the companies are still banging around. There are still dark kitchen spaces that are using the third party deliveries, you know, to, you know, enhance their offering. But there's gonna be a shift, and you know, it's funny you pointed out this strike, or this, you know, the from the drivers, that's a real thing. Right, it is going to impact cost. So how does one, you know, combat that?
Well, and the third car, if enough of those drivers leave and it starts impacting the third party delivery companies, they're obviously going to pay them better or do whatever they have to keep them, because it's a lot of business to lose. And guess who's going to pay? The restaurant, right? You're already seeing. They've got service fees, and you know, you're starting to see some of these little fees creep in there. I had an interesting discussion with a company about, you know, some of their fees, and they have the consumer captive, so they know they can get some of these things, right?
Yeah.
The drivers, the restaurants. I'm with Jay on this. And if you can get them to come back to your restaurant directly, you also have the most chance. Because guess what? If the driver's picking up two or three other things on their journey, and they often are, you're not necessarily always delivering. They're not necessarily always delivering the best quality to the consumer as well. So you got to do it really well if you want them to come back on in a delivery. So it's harder to deliver good food than to present it in the restaurant, especially, you know, the quick service stuff. Maybe the fast food stuff's easy, but
I don't know. You know, I see it, you know, where it will thrive and continue to thrive is in the university space. The kids are not paying for it. Their parents are, right? Mm-hmm. You know, all hours of the night, whatever it is, you want to have your, you know, pizza delivered or your fast food or, I mean, insomnia cookies or whatever it is. The kids aren't thinking, they'll pay, you know, $15 for a $4, you know, Frosty or whatever it is. You know, it doesn't really.
I have a son like that.
Yeah.
$9 coffee.
I'm not paying, but he's paying. But still, it's like, holy shit, that's a $4 item. You paid 12 bucks.
But that's how their mindset is now. This generation coming in, this is the norm for them. This is becoming the norm for them until they have to, you know, put a roof over their head and, you know, raise a family, right? Yeah. We know it, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's the blessing and the curse at the same time, right? We're blessed that we're able to do it. And it's like, well, you eat out all the time. It's, yeah, you know what? I never used to. I can eat out all the time now because I worked hard for 40 years, right? So,
right.
And the sad thing about AI, and I'll bring it back around to what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
The sad thing about AI and tech is that there's more people around. In Canada, Jay, I don't know if you saw the number, 112,000 people, working age people, came to Canada last month in January. 112,000. And our jobs numbers are...
1 month?
112,000, yes.
That's a lot of people for us, Ken.
It's a lot of people for us.
Stop it. I'd be like a million people for you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's a neighborhood.
Yeah. Some of those people want to go into these service jobs, yes. But a lot don't. They want the tech job. They want that, you know, they want whatever job it is that isn't necessarily the food service job. So we have this sort of growing demand. We don't have people. You said there's a labor issue, but there's still all these people unemployed, right? So yeah. there's a growing problem in that we're expecting tech to fix some of this. And we're pushing hard. You know, restaurants are pushing hard for tech and automation to fix it because we've got this massive
hope in every other angle. They're losing hope in every other angle. They're going to look at everything for survival.
And they should, Jay. But if our government, and I think you have a similar government to us, keeps spoon feeding us, you know, kind of, hey, you know, not sustainability, but livability. Here's a sort of a, you know, they're talking about a basic income in Canada of everybody's going to get a basic income to thing. That disincentivizes anybody to work.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
You understand that. I understand that. A lot of people would say, no, well, you know, there's that just makes sure everybody can live. I said, but not only a few people can work. We need everybody working in all sectors. Right?
It's interesting. So you know, technology and automation replaces a lot of the jobs.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the industry, new industries emerge, you know, that, you know, need people to work, right? A lot of people are going into the tech space, right? A lot of the kids, they are going into tech.
Yeah.
Because that's where
the growth is, for sure. Yeah.
That's where the future is. Yeah, I don't know. We don't have the answers.
No.
Right?
Well, we're going to be faced with a big dilemma because we've got a growing population, a growing aging population, and basically probably around the world, right? But in Canada, the U.S. specifically, we have an aging population that's going to need more and more care, and we have less and less people around that are willing and wanting to do those jobs.
Well, I also think that I think it's a cult, like a, not a cultural, a generational thing.
Yeah.
Work ethic.
Yeah.
You're right. The desire to earn an honest buck, right? To, you know, roll up your sleeves and, you know, get dirt under the nails and really get at it.
Yeah.
I think there's a sense of entitlement with this, with the younger generation. And it's not, they're very smart. They're smarter than we are.
Yes. Because
they're able to do it from their homes. They don't have to go into an office. They can demand that they don't go into an office. And the employers are just so thrilled to have someone who wants to work. And they'll overpay them just so they're working. It's really wild to see.
It is. I agree with you 100%. Anybody, I've said that to many, many people. Anybody that wants to work hard is going to have the world by their tail in work ethic. So it's going to be really hard. I think the future is going to be really, really tough because we have a lot of, and I think there's still a lot of people out there that want to work hard. And we see this even in Canada, right? Immigrants will come and they'll work their ass off. They'll work really hard. There'll be new Canadians, and Canadians that have been here a long time saying, well, they're taking my job. It's like, no, they're not. You don't want to work that job. That job's there for you just as much as it is for them.
Yes.
We have, you know, and you have it the same in the States, right? You have agricultural workers that we bring in from other countries, and it's only because Canadians don't want to do it.
They don't want to do it. So someone's going to. And
right.
then you got to find someone to point a finger at. I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah, we all have the same issue. I think it's already becoming dangerous in Canada because so many people are coming, and now that our growth is not keeping pace with the amount of people that are coming in. So the jobs that used to be there for the new immigrants, the new Canadians, are not there. They're not there in manufacturing. They're not there in construction. They're not there in automation or any of these other sort of advanced fields. And they're, you know, even in the service industry, they don't want to go to that industry, and they'll avoid it for a couple of years because they can. So we've got a whole bunch of people. We have really high rents. We have really high expenses. Everything's really expensive. And still the food service industry is, and millions of people coming in, right? I don't know what it's going to be like a million people this year. It was a million people last year. It's supposed to be capped at 500,000, but you've got probably another 200,000 students. And still the food service industry has no people to work. It's wild.
It's wild.
And the tech is not there yet, right? Our automation in our kitchens, for sure. I think that's a long automation at the front end, automation at the, you know, ordering and all that stuff. I think that's pretty good now, right?
Yeah. You touched on something that talking about. We're not supposed to talk politics, right?
No, we talk politics all the time.
Yeah. No.
Yes, we do. It's the late show.
No,
but you were talking about a million people coming in, what, a year? Oh,
no. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we get that on a daily basis. Right?
I know. Yeah.
But we have the same problem. No, they're coming in, and we can't hire. No one wants to work.
But where they work,
nobody has to, because somewhere somebody's going to take care of that. A long time ago, that never used to. You had to work, and you know, the things were different. Obviously, right? If you went to the 50s and the 1800s, and you know, all the way back, there was work because you had to work, or else you died.
You had to work or you die, right?
I'm not saying that was a good way, but
no. But the governments now are incentivizing people to
not work.
You know, to not work, right? I mean, on some level, you know,
So that, like, and I don't think, as much as I want automation to happen, I'm sad for that. I really am, because I want to go to a restaurant and I want a real person to talk to. I don't want to talk to the machine. Same at the self-checkout, those things. Funny enough, they're, you know, some of the grocers up here are starting to rethink that and take them out, because guess what? People are stealing shit.
Yeah, they're walking out with it.
Yeah, they're walking out with
it. I mean, it's yes, you're right. And they're walking out, and no one, and there's no security or security that's going to do anything about it.
Right.
You know, why, you know, they're just there to be sort of a visual imposing figure to prevent. But at the end of the day, someone's going to do a smash and grab. I'm staying where I am and go ahead. Insurance will take care of it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's insane. It's crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
Anyways, gentlemen, we do have to wrap up because I think we'll be here till tomorrow. I knew the two of you would work well.
Yeah, no, Dominic, I enjoy. And when I come up, and I am going to be coming up, we'll definitely break some bread.
Yeah, are you going to be at the RC show?
I am not. But I'm going to be. I have to hit Calgary so at some point, and then I'll just continue up north a little bit.
Nice.
And
well, I'll come down. I got to come down. Apparently, I was told today. So,
well, Jay owes me a lunch.
No, first of all, I did. You owe me a lunch. I did check.
I'm gonna win this bet too.
This way, I did check, and Uber says yes, you can promote your loyalty programs.
Wait a second. No, that's not what you said. Yeah, they'll take fucking ranks. They'll take your money to be at the top of the page. Of course they will. Who wouldn't? Yeah. No, you were talking about putting an ad in where, hey, get some forks, get some napkins.
Yes.
They won't let you promote in there. They're going to make you pay for it. Send them a message. Say, hey, I want to put this thing saying, fuck Uber, I'm going to go to the restaurant in the middle of my menu. What do you think they're going to say? They're going to say, no, you can't post that, Jay. What are you, nuts?
No, I wouldn't say fuck Uber, but it would be like.
I know you wouldn't. Did you call program. Him today? He said what? WTF in Parliament today?
Yeah.
And yeah, and they said, "Where's the funds?" That's No, of course you wouldn't say. No, you wouldn't say F Uber. You would just, but you would say, "Yeah, come to the restaurant." I don't know. I don't think they would let you put that on there.
His question is though, you're gonna lose. Anyways, Ken's gotta go. It's late in New York right now.
I saw the cat go upstairs, by the way.
The cat.
Oh, the cat. Upstairs. Yeah, the cat.
Everyone's going upstairs.
Everyone's. Anyways,
Ken, it's an absolute pleasure to see you. Thank you again.
You guys are great. No, Jay, thank you so much for having me. Dominic was great.
It was nice.
You know, connecting, talking, chatting, and we'll do it again. And I look forward to breaking bread. This year.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Take care. Ciao.
So,
ciao, ciao.
So, Dominic.
All right, Jay, did I swear? And are we going to get. Swear? It's not a podcast. So.
It's not a podcast. I don't know what you're talking about. So, anyways, thanks again, Dominic. I'm going to end the stream here. Everyone else, thanks again for watching us. We'll end now. There we go. Wait, but did you.